Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, who is John W. from Harleysville, PA.
Hi, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
This is really weird. Feed First means a whole lot to me. I come here just about every week. I didn't quite know what I was getting into when I got to Feed First, let alone Alcoholics Anonymous. But a lot of my friends are here, and it's really cool. So, in a general way, I've never done this. This microphone. I don't know. We'll see what happens. So, in a general way, what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. From what I was told, it's a general way what it used to be like without a higher power. What happened to start seeking a higher power, and then what it's like living in touch with a higher power. And so I'm going to talk about God, and I smile because it's me saying that. and if you rolled your eyes, I can totally relate to you, because you know, it's a God of my understanding, and I completely believe that there's something there, and it's weird for me to say that, because I was the guy who, you know, you had to prove it to me, and somebody did, you guys did, you know, everything I've learned and came from you guys about this whole recovery and alcoholism, higher power, letting go, and everything's from you guys. So anything I said, I've heard from you guys. but it's real to me, and I don't know. You know, my job, I was all twisted up about this day, and I kind of thought it would never happen. and here I am. But it's really weird. But see how many times I can say that. Well, I knew about AA growing up. My dad had a friend known as Sammy the Roofer, and he's still sober today. This was when I was a little kid. I know his sons. I went to meetings with his sons. It doesn't matter. I guess I knew AA is where you go if you don't want to drink or if you're having problems with drinking. And when I grew up, we were Catholic, but we were only Catholic like on Christmas and Easter. And we were usually late. And it was just something we did. You know, my sisters went to Catholic school. I didn't. I have three older sisters. And our family, I grew up in Colmar. We moved from, born in Mount Airy, and then moved up for whatever reasons. My dad was a roofer. So I always loved watching the guys come after work and unloading the trucks and partying back there by the dumpster and, you know, sitting on the tailgate and telling stories. I just loved it. And like, as my sisters got older, their boyfriends worked for my father, and I just love those guys. I just love partiers. I can relate to them. And I love you guys, you know. I really do. You guys know what I'm talking about. Like, you guys can relate to me, and you understand the way I think, And I understand the way you think. And that's what's so cool about AA. One of the many things that are cool about AA. So I was really twisted up about this, speaking tonight. And maybe halfway through I'll stop shivering. But, you know, I was going through my childhood. What am I going to say? How am I going to say it? The speakers here are so good. And I always tell people about this place. You know, it's like I say 95% of the time I get an awesome message out of this place. So it's probably one of the 5%. So, and I'll definitely be jumping around. So what it was like, you know, I three older sisters and a mother and father who loved each other and loved their children, and we were a party family, and I got away with a lot. My sisters were in a lot of trouble, and so by the time it came for me, I didn't really have consequences, like if I wasn't home for dinner and stuff. And my dad partied, and that was just commonplace. You know, that's what we did. You know, everybody ended up in the kitchen, and it was always a party. And I just loved every minute of it. It was great growing up with them. My mom had a VW bus and an 8-track player with like Procol Harum and Moody Blues, and it was just so cool. But I learned how to manipulate young, and I didn't know it at the time. You know, looking back, I learned how to manipulate, and I learned how to get out of trouble. Like, I would just stay on the edge of trouble, you know, at school, and then music. You know, my parents' motto were, do as I say, not as I do, you know, and My mom would teach me about karma, and I remember doing yoga with her when I was a little kid, and you know, the golden rule, treat others the way you want to be treated. Like, I knew this, you know, these moral, I think we all know right from wrong, you know, and what happened to me, I dabbled, you know, I dabbled with stealing and shoplifting and, you know, getting away with stuff, and then you know, you get detention at school, and the first one is like, oh no, I got detention. And then after your sixth or seventh detention, you're like, yeah, whatever, give me another one, you know. So I think my moral compass or my barometer got a little foggy, you know. I'm sure I tasted beers along the way. I mean, they were there all the time. My first blotto drunk was with my older sister. I guess she was watching me. Me and my buddy, Tommy Cope, we went to Peace Valley one night, and it was like the evening, sunset, and we were drinking vodka and Kool-Aid, all of us, like my sister, her friend, Ronnie, and me and Tommy. And I was 12 years old. You know, we were like, I think they were just like watching us, and but I remember getting wasted and just rolling around and just feeling sick and just being wasted. And the only thing I really remember from that night is, you know, the first couple were rough, and after that they went down pretty easy. And we were just passing around this jug, you know, I don't know. But I remember on the way home, I remember thinking, oh my God, we're going to die. Because he was flying around corners and my head's out the window. But I remember distinctly remembering, I remember feeling that I didn't care. I was like, I don't know. And that's the story of my life. You know, I get to the point where I just don't care. So where do I go from here? I got a million diner stories, I call them. You know, we've all got them. I don't remember praying. I did go to CCD, but I couldn't really believe it. You know, like I remember my dad saying, you know, in the church parking lot. Like, oh, look at them. They're racing to get to the edge, you know, to the stop sign. You know, they were just in church together. And he was a very good judge of character. I am not. But he was a good judge of character. And I just remember him saying stuff like, ah, these hypocrites, you know, they're all nice to each other at church. And then as soon as they go out in the parking lot, they, you know, so I remember, like, the stories and, I don't know. I just didn't know whether or not to believe it. And I just kind of went on my merry way, you know, through school and scraping by, you know. I was a smart kid. But, you know, all my teachers, all the report cards say if he would only apply himself, you know, he's so much potential and blah, blah, blah. And I would do enough just to skate by. So with a partying family like that, a lot of fun was had. We had a house down the shore, and I had my friends down the shore and my friends up here in the summertime and the weekends and the off season. And I could chameleon with anyone. You know, I could chameleon with my guys down the shore. They were like the, you know, Led Zeppelin and Kiss we listened to, and then I had my friends up here and we were like sports and then I had my friends from the neighborhood. They were my friends from school, and then my friends from the neighborhood. Always get in trouble. We lived by Melody Brook, and we would go garaging, and we'd get, like, warm cases of Jenny Cream Ale and, like, drink it till the foam was coming out of our ears and go ice skating, and that's what we did. But we were little kids, you know. I have kids, and I just can't believe them. I can't believe what we did, how young we were. And I'd always had a knack for picking a lock or getting through a window, or I could always figure a way into a garage or something. And again, no real consequences. You know, we would. I remember the Dairy Queen. We broke into the Dairy Queen and stole a big box of licorice, these long licorices, and drove our bikes to Peace Valley in the middle of the night. Parents didn't know. And then we took canoes out in the middle of the night. I don't know how we got that done, but. So there's all kinds of stories like that. But the only consequences was if I got caught. You know, like, everything was fine unless you get caught, right? So when you get caught, I would just, you know, manipulate my way out of it and moving on. Meanwhile, my older sisters were getting more and more in trouble, getting kicked out of school. And I remember being 15 on my bicycle in Lansdale, and I see my sister walking. And I'm like, oh, no, here she comes. And I know she was just going to try and bum money or something. And she was in bad shape. And I remember thinking, I'm never going to get like that. You know, I'm never going to get like that. And I guess I was around 15, and she went into this place called Eagleville. And, I didn't know anything about it. One friend of mine from 8th and 9th grade, he went to a rehab once, and he was real quiet when he got back. But I didn't know anything about recovery. I didn't know anything about you know, what we do here and this formula we have. I just knew if it gets bad, there's a place to go. So my sister, she gets out of this place and she starts hanging out with these new group of friends, and she's going to these things called meetings, and she's changing, man. She's like changing before my eyes. And I couldn't believe it. Like, I couldn't believe it. And she would talk to me and tell me about God and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. But there was one morning, one of those mornings where you wake up, and I was at a phone booth in Lansdale. And I was sitting there, and I called my sister, Sue. And I said, hey, Sue, can you come pick me up? It was just, it's a great story, but it doesn't matter. But it was one of those mornings. So I was just like, oh, God, where am I going with my life, you know? And I'm like 18 and or 19, and she picks me up, and she's like, had enough? You know, she gives me one of those looks. Like, so I was like, you know what? I should go to those meetings with you. I think I should, you know. I don't really know what I'm doing out here, and it's just going to get worse. These are my thoughts that were going through my head. And she's like, cool. So the neat thing was that guy was in rehab a few years later in eighth and ninth grade. He was there. And he had 4 or 5 years sober at the time. And his buddy was my age, and we were all the same age. And my sister was hanging out with that crowd, and it was they were all having fun. And I got like 6 keychains with this fellowship, and I had a great time. It was awesome, and I loved the speaker meetings. I loved hanging out with everybody afterwards. And then I would listen to these speakers, and I'd be like, and then I'd be like, no, I would never do that. I've never done that. So what I was doing, I was comparing to them, as much as genuine. Heartfelt laughter. We'd go to these dances. We made bombs out of acetylene. We did some crazy stuff. It was crazy, but I had genuine fun, and I'll never forget it. You know, it made an impression on me. But I wasn't that bad, you know. And I figured it out. I saw, the steps. They had those too, you know. But I figured that's for if you're really bad, you know, then you should do them. But you know, someone gave me a step book, and I was like, I'm all right, you know. But I was glad you had them, because you guys probably really need them, and I'm fine. And I figured it out. It's all about spirituality. I figured it out. Remember I told you I had a crappy judgment of character? I also make really bad decisions. When it's me running the show, I make really, they seem to be great decisions, but they turn out to be really bad decisions over and over and over again. So I figured it out. I'm like, I just live spiritually. I just live by spiritual principles, and I just stick with beer and pot. And I'll be fine. I'll be Rastafarian. Everything will be cool. And so that's what I did. I actually went to Jamaica that summer with my parents and really jumped in. And that was a good time. But if you're like me, that doesn't last. And it didn't last. And, you know, fast forward progression. And you start saying, F it. You know, why not? And I stuck by my principles for a while, but what happened was my dad came down with cirrhosis. 49 years old, he died. And I was like, whoa. My judgment was, well, if there's a God, why the heck did he do this? You know, how could there's no way. So there goes all the spirituality I tapped into at the time, a little bit. I was like, screw this. I went off on a tear. And, you know, that whatever there was out there, I don't know how he watched over me over the years, but you can imagine. I'm sure we all have the same similar stories. So lo and behold, you get into another jackpot, and I remember I was. There's a lot of different stories here, but I want to get sober. And what happened was I was in a relationship. We had a daughter, and we were seeing a marriage counselor. I don't even know if we were married yet. It was pretty foggy back then, and it was a one-on-one session with this marriage counselor, and. She says, tell me, and I told her my story up to this point. And she says, whoa, tell me about these meetings. How much do you drink? I'm like, just a 6-pack or two a day, no big deal, you know. And, you know, I'm not doing shots. I'm not doing, you know, anything else. And she's like, you know, I think your relationship would get better if you went back to meetings. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right. Meanwhile, my sister, 2 of them now, are getting jacking up like 10 years, you know. They're living a life beyond their wildest dreams. And I see it, you know. And they're always checking in on me, you know. They're always like, how you doing? And I'd be like, oh, I'm good. Then they would look at each other and they go, ego. And I didn't even know what ego was. Like, I don't know. So I'm like, yeah, I should go. I should go to the meeting. So I'm 24. Little daughter who I love, and crazy marriage or whatever it was, marriage, I don't even know. I don't want to belittle it, you know, I don't know. Not good judgment when I'm on my own. My moral barometer, you know, once you get, you know, when you first get arrested and you're like, oh my God, this is horrible. But after a while, you go in there and you're like, yeah. And you roll, you know, you know how to roll your own fingerprints and better than the guy trying to do it for you. Like, the things just become clogged, you know, fogged. And that's normal for me. You know, it's normal, and the abnormal had become normal. And if it's normal, it's normal, right? So that's all I knew. So, you know, this is the progression. So what happened was I start going back to meetings, 24 years old. I'm like, all right, I'm done with drinking. And I would go in at 8 o'clock, and I would leave at 9 o'clock. I didn't give my number, didn't give my name, didn't shake hands, didn't, you know, I put on my face. You know, my don't mess with me face. And I'm fine face. And, you know, unapproachable face. And it worked. I didn't get any help. I wasn't desperate enough. So I go to these meetings. It was a sobriety group in Southampton, and I would go to Flower Town in the morning before work, and I didn't drink. I don't know really how, because I didn't have a program of recovery, but I was dry for sure, and I knew I was an alcoholic. I admitted I was years ago, you know, and I meant it. You know, I just figured, yeah, I am, but I'll be all right, you know. So, you know, this goes on, and the meetings fade away because I'm doing other things alcoholically. I'm working alcoholically. I'm fishing alcoholically. I'm playing golf alcoholically. Never got any good at any of them, but I just was consumed by them, and this went on, and I stayed dry for 6 years. Two more kids, still dysfunctional, crazy marriage. I was just going through life like, you know, when, like, what's going to happen? When's the shoe going to, you know, stop the world? I want to get off. Is what I felt like, and it was just like spinning plates, and I just couldn't take it anymore, and a beer sounded like a good idea. 6 years, man. 6 years like that. Crazy. Crazy. And finally, I had a beer. I had a beer, and nothing happened. And I had another one. And it went on, and it progressively got worse. To the point where all my I nevers and I the stuff I put down before I picked up again, and worse than ever, it was cheaper than ever, and it got crazy, and beer wasn't doing it anymore, and I was in this lifestyle of like, this was my life, you know, this was what I did all the time, and some days I wouldn't drink or I couldn't drink. And or some days I can only have a couple, and I wouldn't, because I don't want to have a couple. You know, if I'm going to start, I'm going to finish. I had to get there, and the beer wasn't doing it anymore. I had to drink so much beer, I'd pee the bed, and it was just wasn't doing it anymore. So I had to find another solution, which was vodka. And, you know, it just took me down. And I knew where I was going. I really didn't. Deep in my heart, I knew where I was going with it, and it wasn't a good place. And you know, I was 39. I'll get sober here. So this went on and on. So I, 6 years, 24, 30. So I drank for another 9 years, progressively getting worse and worse and worse. Trying to raise, you know, I would stories. Trying to raise the kids and deal with everything I was dealing with, and you know, keeping a face, you know, keeping the face of a businessman, keeping a face of a son, keeping a face of a husband on the outside. More chameleon stuff. And my son went out for baseball, and he was horrible. And it was April 2010, baseball season, and it was horrible. He was bad. I'm like, oh man, that poor kid. He just wants to play ball with his friends. And I was like, that's it. This summer, this fall, this winter, I'm going to play with him all the time. When he goes out next year, he's going to learn. He's going to know how to play ball. And I was determined, you know. And next year, April 2006, he went out for baseball again, and I didn't do a damn thing. And I'm like, oh my God, you know. I said, what am I going to do? I'm 39 years old. Am I going to die in 10 years like my father, or go get sober like my sisters and live, you know? So I'm like, that's it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right. And I went to Aldi. I was living in Doylestown. I went to Aldi and said, I'm an alcoholic. I need help. And they put me in outpatient. And all I really wanted was a meeting list. And I was going to jump into AA feet first. I was going to jump in and do this thing. And I was going to be the best AA-er ever. And I did AA alcoholically. And it was great. I felt at home. I said, I'm back. Give me a styrofoam cup of warm brown water and a metal chair, and I'm in, you know. And this guy came up to me in my first meeting. His name's Ed. And he said, how you doing? Here's my phone number, and here's a Living Sober book. And I said, call me, you know. And I was like, wow, this is cool. He reached out to the newcomer. You know, I didn't know that then. And I was the newcomer, you know, and it was great. And then a new guy came in like a week later. And I was like, hey, I'm the new guy, you know. So it's all still me o'clock, you know. And but I got around, and I went to a lot of meetings in Doylestown, a lot of different types of meetings, and I went to them all. And I remember this guy, he doesn't know this, but he went out. We had about 30 days together, and he went out. And I was like, yes, because now I had more time than he did. It's like, I don't know. It's so weird. So, you know, looking back, I see the selfishness, and it's just crazy. But anyway, I didn't drink. I went to a lot of meetings, and, you know, they said do 90 and 90. Don't drink, go to meetings. It'll get better. You know, keep coming back. And I was like, all right, you better be right. You better be right. You know, and I just kept doing it. And I was like, him again. You know, people start getting on my nerves, you know, like, don't raise your hand, you know. Oh, he raised his hand. And, like, my whole point of going to meetings was I want to pick a seat where I can see the pretty girl. And that's where I'm going to sit. Like, it was just all about me, you know. And, but you guys were rubbing off on me, you know. I could see that there was like the spiritual guys and the fun guys and the gossip guys and the let's talk about everybody in the meeting guys, and I hung with all of them, still a chameleon, you know. And but I started branching out after a while, and I was like, what else is there, you know? Well, there's got to be more out there, you know, like, let's go get some more experiences. And I would go to different meetings, and I did. And then I remember, you know, you read how it works every meeting, and I was taking it literally, like, this is how it works, you know. And but people didn't really seem to pay any attention to it. And then I remember one meeting, they were like, oh, well, they're, you know, big book thumpers. And I'm like, what's that, you know? And I remember thinking, wait a minute, I want to be a big book thumper, you know. And I really didn't know what that meant, you know, but I remember thinking, that's where this is, you know. And so now I'm getting like time, and sobriety's happening. I'm in recovery, and I'm learning the lingo, and I'm starting to share, and And I moved up here. And I guess I had like, well, no, actually, Jackie and I met, and I had a whole new group of friends on the river, and I started hanging out with them, and I had my Doylestown people, my river people, because they're from New Hope, Lambertville, Solbury, and it was like I was branching out. I had these different, you know, and there's people I didn't like and people I liked, and so it was nice. It was nice. It was a nice group of people, and we're all sober together. We're all helping each other and doing the deal, right? And then I come up here, and I moved to Pennsburg, and I started. I'm like, all right, I got to get my new list, you know, because on the weekends I would go to New Hope at Jackie's house, and then during the week I'd have to have my Monday night, you know, my Tuesday night, you know, and I would Wednesday night Red Hill and Zion Tuesday, and then I'd go to this place on Allentown Road, East Swamp Creek Road, and I'm like, I didn't know what an hour-long speaker meeting was, you know, and I come in, and I'm like, whoa. But right away, the face comes on, you know, the don't talk to me face, I'm okay face. I'll just sit in the corner and observe. But something was different here, and it freaked me out. And it was something I've never heard before, but I left feeling great. I'm like, whoa, there's something cool there. You got to check it out. I start telling people about it, and you got to come to Feet First. You got to check it out. See, when I said I jumped in Feet First, I jumped in, and this woman back in Doylestown, she's a bit of a nut, and I love her, and she goes, welcome to our pond. There's plenty of room for you in our pond. And I was like, isn't that nice? It just felt good. But I did. I jumped in, and I started soaking it up. You know, I didn't do any work. I didn't paddle. I didn't tread water. I just stood there and soaked it up. And then I come up here, and it's like this whole new wave of, I don't know what it was. It was, you know, we called you guys the God Squad, you know, like we're talking about God and solution. And to me, a solution was something you mixed up, you know, like a drink. Solution. Mix it up, a little bit of that, solution. But it's a whole new way of thinking of it, you know, like. They're talking about, you know, steps and Big Book. And I had gotten a sponsor, Ed, that guy Ed. He took me through the steps. We got up to six, and I was good, you know. And he did a great job. He did what his sponsor did with me. But I was good. You know, I'm fine. You know, we got to the fourth step, and I... You know when someone mentions the fourth step, and automatically the thing that goes in your mind is the thing you're not going to say? It's the first thing you think of, and you're like, I'm not saying that. I'll say it. And I did. I was very honest and thorough just about, and I did left it out, but I wasn't going to tell anyone. No one. I didn't think it was necessary. I didn't think that was, you weren't really serious, right? Yeah, like, you don't have to say everything, and I'm not telling them that. And I didn't. And life went on. But it didn't. My judgment, my way of thinking, but there was something going on up here, and I'd come in every Monday, and met Phil. Phil and I would come up from Pennsburg, and we'd hit the meeting, and every Monday, he'd pick me up or whatever, and I'd come in, and there was this one dude at the door, and he's the kind of guy, you know, how you doing? He would, like, ask you twice, you know. He was like, good. And then you walk through, you know. But I would see him all the time, and he'd always be like, you know, give me the, how you doing, you know. I was like, phew. But I was here one night. Jackie and I were here, and we heard Sandy speak. And I'm thinking, wow, this girl. I always saw Sandy here helping girls and sitting with girls and taking new girls and going up to new girls. And I'm like, wow, she's really working this thing, and she spoke one night, and it was great. It was an awesome speaker, and she told me how she had all this time. You know, she told us she had all this time, and she saw this cat who she didn't see for a while, and then she saw him again, and he had changed, and something different was about him. And she's talking about this guy, so I'm like, It just came over me. Like, I was like, I got to go to her after the meeting and ask her who this guy was. I wanted what she had, and I wanted to find out how she got it. So I went up to her, and I asked her just that, and she goes, oh, yeah, it's Chris. And I'm like, it's that guy. And I'm like, oh, shit. And I was convinced, my judgment, see, is I was convinced I had nothing in common with this cat whatsoever. And I went up to him. I was like, he's like, I want what Sandy has. I want what you have. Will you help me? He's like, yeah, here's my number. Let's meet. And I was like, all right, I got a new sponsor. And we met in his house, and we sat at his coffee table. And he's like, well, you know, he asked me a couple questions, you know, and he's like, and it came to this God thing. And I was like, ugh. And he's like, all right, well, do you believe I believe? And I looked around his house, and I was like, yeah. He had, like, God pictures and spiritual sayings and books of God things. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, perfect. That's all we need. And I was like, that's it? And he's like, yeah, let's do step three. And I was like, whoa. You know, he took me with one, two, three that night at his coffee table. And I don't know what it was. It was just the way he was teaching me was like, the whole time he's like, you see this here? This is what you're going to show your guy. This is what you're going to show your guy. He's like, this is how you're going to show him. And he's teaching me how to take someone through the steps. I'm like, this is a cool approach. I like this guy's style. You know, like this guy's, and he was very, he's like, look, I'm really nobody. You know, I don't look to me for, you know, I will, you know, I screw this stuff up all the time. And I'm like, this guy's not very confident of himself, but he's teaching me, he's just so cool. And he goes, look, you know, my job is one thing, is to get you in the hand of a higher power, put your hand in the hand of higher power and walk away. And you're going to help his kids. He says, you're a father. And I said, yeah. And he goes, well, you want the best for your kids, right? And I said, yeah. Of course I want the best for my kids. He's like, you love them unconditionally no matter what they do, whatever trouble they get into. You love them, right? And I said, yeah, of course. And he goes, well, that could be your higher power. You know, he's like, my higher power, he says, my higher power is God, and I believe he's the Father, and we are his kids, and our job is to help his kids. I'm like, that's cool. You know, we're all his kids, all right. And it's not, what I've tapped into is a power, for sure. It's not what I thought it was. You know, it's not that God, like, I would roll my eyes. And I don't want to offend anybody in here, or you know, this is the way I see it. This is my story. This is my perception. My truth. There's certainly a power out there, and I need something because I was dry without anything, and I was going nuts. I had 2 years sober in AA. Thought I did the third step, but I was still managing my life, you know. But I need a power. I need it like I needed to drink. Like I needed to drink every day. Because, you know, when you walk in the bar and you're like, you don't even get in the bar. You're almost at the bar and you walk in and you're like, ah. It's like, ah, feeling, you know. I'm about to drink, you know. And it's like all my problems of the day are going to go away. Well, that was killing me. That power, it was there, but it was killing me. And I was going to die like my father did, the way I was drinking, because I drink hard. I didn't know I needed something, right? I need something. And my judgment, my decision-making is not good unless I'm in contact with this power. But I didn't know how to get contact with this power. You You know, like all religions have this ah. You know, pick any religious icon or you know, the Buddha, Jesus, God. You know, they all have this ah, this ah. You know what I mean? And you know, the way I look at it is, it doesn't matter what you believe in, as long as you believe in something out there. It's a life force. Like for me, it's a life force. It's a spirit of the universe. It's like the Indians or you know, for societies forever have been praying and going after this God or this something. And so it's nothing new. Like who am I to say there isn't? You know, who am I to say there isn't one? You know, societies and people forever have been going for this power. This inspiration, this conscience, and he introduced me to that. He explained it that way. He's like, "That's what you got to be dependent on. You have to be, you know, higher power dependent, not sponsor dependent." So that was me doing step three. You know, like, all right, my thoughts and my actions. All right. You know, my thoughts and my actions pretty much got me in a lot of trouble. You know, I was convinced of A, B, and C at this point. And I didn't realize I could move on to step four without having a God. You know, in other words, I can't even get one. Until I got all this stuff blocking me. That moral compass was fogged up with everything I've been dumping in there. All this guilt, shame, remorse. I had to get that stuff out of the way. And that's what the fourth and fifth and eighth and ninth is all about. It says in our big book, the tenth step is where we first have our conscious contact with this higher power. Oh. So I couldn't even get there until I did the work. And the whole time he's showing me the work, he's showing me how to take someone else through the steps. And he said, "This is what our job is. From this point forward, you got to go to meetings and look for people to help. You got to show them this stuff." And that's when it happened. He said, "Go to someone who's sitting there by himself with that face on, and go say hi." And that's when this whole thing made sense to me, man. It's unbelievable when it happened. But someone said, I don't even know how it happened, to tell you the truth. But I found myself sitting at a coffee table, taking them through the steps. And that's when I realized, this is why I did the steps. Like, they didn't even make sense to me. I did them because I'm in AA, right? But I did them anyway. And I thought it was about me. I thought I had a drinking problem. You know, I had 2 years sober, and I'm still nuts by myself. And I drive around. I have to have the radio on. When I'm at home, I have to have the TV on or the radio on. When I'm at work, I'm fine. When I'm in AA meeting, I'm fine. But when I'm alone and quiet, I couldn't stand it. And the first time it happened was that hour after the fifth step. And by the way, when I did my fifth step with him, I said the thing I was never going to tell anybody. And he knew it. He's like, "What else you got?" Or something like that. I don't know what he said, but I came right out with it. And he was like, "No way." No, he didn't say that. He said, he said, "Yeah, me too. You know, me too. It's okay." And I was like, I went home and I did the hour. I actually followed through with something for once. You know, I finished something for once, and I did the fifth step at home. You know, and it gives clear directions in the book, and this book has become vital. I mean, I just love it. It's an operator's manual for my head. You know, it's when all else fails, read the directions. You know. If you're not happy, sober, read the directions, man. It's like getting the box and building the thing and then figuring, oh, I got a couple extra screws here. You know, if you read the directions, you know what I mean? So the people who wrote it are just people like us. You know what I mean? They just had this idea. Let's write this stuff down. But they're really just like us. You know, they're not kidding when they tell us this. They know. You know what I mean? And so I do an hour, and I'm sitting there, and there was nothing. It was quiet. It was like 10 o'clock at night or something. I don't know what time it was, but I know it was 10 after something when I sat down. And I sat there for an hour, because just when I was like, I wonder if it's been an hour. I made sure the clock was behind me, and I turned around, and it was exactly 10 after. And I was like, whoa. Like, and I looked down, and my book was open at that page, and I saw two things, power and God. And I was like, ugh. I still get the shivers when I, because it was just weird, you know. Like, all right, I was like, all right, I got it. But when I first tried to take someone through the steps, I don't even remember who it was, but it was the first victim. But it was like, this is why I did it, because I'm showing them second step stuff, and I'm showing them first step, the doctor's opinion, and I'm showing them this stuff in the book. I'm like, oh my God, this is the only reason I went through the steps, was to take someone else through the steps. And then it just gets better, man. And I get this feeling of like, and that's what I was searching for, man. That's what wasn't working at the bar anymore. This feeling of, like when I get someone and it's not me, because I don't really know what the hell I'm doing. But it's, and then watching them get it, and then hearing, hey, I got a sponsee, you know, like they're doing the work. And then it's like, man, it just, so this thing I jumped into with my feet first, it turns into, it's a stream, right? And the stream has a current, and this current like pushes you, and you can fight it, you can go against the current, but I've done that for years, you know, but this current just pushes you, and you get in this flow, and it just, it goes and it comes out of us. And I don't even know how it works. Like, so it's this, I've tapped in. I finally got the tools to tap into this keg of power that's not booze. And it's as real. And that's the God I'm talking about. And I get so enthusiastic about it because it's so freaking real. And I can't believe I'm even saying it. I don't know, man. It's just awesome. I hear so many good speakers, like speaker tapes, and been going down the stepping stones a lot. And, you know, like this, some friends of mine started a speaker meeting just like this, where we get speakers from around 2 hours away, and it's on Friday nights. And we go into the step study, where it's a big book study, where we don't talk about our problems, which is kind of weird, but it's kind of cool because they just study the book. They just study the book, 1 through 12 steps, and then back over again. And it really teaches you. It gives you a good working knowledge of the 12 steps. So when you're with someone, you know, it just comes out. It just, you don't even know where it comes from. It just comes out, and sometimes you actually help someone. But it's really the point of me getting sober and going through the steps was, now I can help God's kids, which is what Chris was saying to begin with. And that's all he does. And, you know, that's where my mindset is. I go to meetings now and I'm like, maybe I can help someone, you know. Where it used to be like, oh, they got half and half here. All right, you know. You know, it was all about me o'clock. And now it's, I try and I bring it into work. You know, I bring it home. I bring this way. And it's just a better way, man. It's the ah. And now that's my message, really. It's this message. It's all in this instruction manual. And you know, if you take AA and you say the word ah, right? That's all I got. Thanks.